Hi, this is Karen Brown from Go Green Inside. Today I'll be chatting with Heidi Fritz, a naturopathic doctor and research fellow at the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine. Heidi is passionate about advancing the evidence base supporting naturopathic medicine, and today she's with us to talk about her work studying soy and breast cancer. Hello, Heidi. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Karen. Thank you.
So it seems to me that soy is in the news and in the media fairly often, but there's been a lot of mixed messages about the health benefits of soy and some concerns raised as well. And I know personally I'm quite confused about it all, so I'm hoping you can help walk us through and sort through some of that confusion. So what is the concern about soy foods, particularly for women?
Mm-hmm. Well, for instance, I have a lot of women coming into my practice and they tell me right off the bat that they avoid soy. And I think the biggest concern around that is there's this perceived estrogenic effect. So women are under the impression that soy promotes the effect of estrogen in the body, and of course that's been associated with increased risk of breast cancer. So this seems to be the primary concern. However, it's not entirely true, in my opinion, because the isoflavones that are in soy are actually phytoestrogens. And although that term phytoestrogen can literally be interpreted as plant estrogen, isoflavones don't act the same way as estrogen in the body.
Okay. So you've actually done what's called a systematic review on soy and breast cancer. Can you explain in simple terms what that means and then what it was you were actually trying to evaluate and figure out?
Sure. So a systematic review is a comprehensive review look at the existing literature on a given topic. So we're looking at soy for the prevention or prevention of recurrence of breast cancer. And in our review, we also assessed whether soy may have estrogenic effects, even in women who don't have breast cancer. So it's a very comprehensive look. The term systematic simply means that you're including all the existing evidence. So you're not picking and choosing just the studies that support your hypothesis, and you're not, you know, blindly leaving out certain information. So it's a very comprehensive look at the evidence on a given topic.
Great. Okay, so then I guess the key question is, what did you find out in answer to those two key questions?
Sure. So our review, we ended up including 127 studies on soy. Of those, just under 40 were randomized controlled trials, and then there was a very larger number of observational studies. And these are studies where you're assessing groups of women, looking at their level of soy consumption, and then assessing them for the risk of breast cancer. And what we found in these studies, well, first of all, we didn't find any studies that reported an increased risk of getting breast cancer if you were eating more soy. So there really isn't any human-level data out there supporting this perception. What we did find is that in some of the studies, there was actually a decreased risk of getting cancer if you consumed more soy. So it's actually the converse of what the popular conception is.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, I don't know. Do you know where this misconception kind of arose in the first place?
I think in part it's because of soy being perceived as being a phytoestrogen, and it certainly is true that soy is a phytoestrogen, but I don't think people really understand what phytoestrogens do in the body. And, you know, certainly the science on this is just emerging too, so we can't blame the general population for this. But phytoestrogens can actually antagonize the effect of estrogen, so they can reduce the effect of estrogen in the body. So it's not necessarily promoting breast cancer or tumor growth. So I think part of the misconception is just around the term itself. And the other part of why people may think that soy increases breast cancer is because there have been some preliminary studies in cells. So you put cells in a petri dish, you put isoflavones beside them, and see if they seem to grow faster. And so some of those studies have shown that it may promote cell growth. However, that's a very different model than what the human body is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, are there any caveats to any of this? Are there particular groups of women, perhaps, that maybe still do need to be a little bit more concerned about soy for some reason?
Sure. So in terms of stage of life, premenopausal versus postmenopausal, there doesn't seem to be a great amount of difference in terms of the effect of soy. However, a group of women that perhaps should exercise some caution are women who are on hormone-modulating drugs for treatment of breast cancer. So women who may be on tamoxifen, these women should not be supplementing with any sort of soy isoflavones. If they consume soy in their diet, it should be very moderate amounts. So, you know, certainly not over 3 servings per day. That's considered the cutoff. And the reason for that is not because there's actually evidence of soy interfering with it, but more so just the fact that we don't really know. So this is an area that needs more research before we can make recommendations around it.
And what about the soy products themselves? So there's, you know, soy comes in different forms. Are there any differences that you found between the different forms of soy?
Right. So this question comes up often around GMO soy, genetically modified soy foods, and also with respect to fermented soy versus non-fermented soy. And unfortunately, we don't really have the data to make clear distinctions in either of these two categories, simply because the type of studies we're relying on are assessing large groups of women, so hundreds of women, who are consuming soy as part of their regular diet. And so when you think of, you know, the types of foods this might include, it would be like soy milk, tofu, could be edamame. And there's going to be a mix of genetically modified foods in that group, and there's also going to be fermented and non-fermented soy in that group. And they all get mixed together when you do the study analysis. So there's not really data to substantiate clear differences. Certainly with the GMO, there may be differences that we see coming out down the road. But at this time, we don't really have a lot of data. And certainly with the fermented versus non-fermented, that's another, unfortunately, at this point, unsubstantiated claim.
And what about the differences between, say, you know, milk versus the tofu versus maybe, you know, a soy protein powder that goes into a breakfast shake? Or is that, is it all considered safe to the same degree, or did your study kind of, delineate between those?
Yeah, we didn't look specifically at types of soy food, but in general, 2 servings of soy per day is considered to be equivalent to about 50 milligrams of isoflavones, and that would be considered what's a therapeutic dose. So if you were trying to give soy for a therapeutic purpose, that's kind of the dose that you'd be aiming for. So.
Great, okay. Now, where can people learn more about perhaps the study itself or about your work in general? And I know you have a clinical practice as well,
mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yeah, so my husband and I are both naturopathic doctors, and we practice in Bolton. It's a town about half an hour northwest of Toronto. It's called the Bolton Naturopathic Clinic, so our website is boltonnaturopathic.ca. You can also look up the CCNM, the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine, website, and if you go under research, it will have the abstracts of all of our published studies, so you can certainly obtain more information that way. And then the last thing is this publication on soy, our actual study. We anticipate that it will be published probably in the next 2 months or so, and it's going to be published in the Public Library of Science, or PLOS is the journal. And it's an open access journal, so anyone can go on the website and download a copy of the full study.
Oh, super. That's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Heidi, this has been really, really helpful. I think you've certainly cleared things up for me, and I'm sure you have for our listeners as well. So I want to thank you again very much for being here today.
Thank you very much.
Thanks again. Okay, bye for now.
Bye-bye.
We hope you enjoyed the podcast, and for more great tips on natural health, inspired living, and how to sustain your internal environment, please visit us at gogreeninside.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at GoGreenInside. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.